Welcome to Pushing Up Lilies. I'm your host, Julie Mattson. Pushing Up Lilies is a weekly true crime podcast with spine-tingling, unusual, and terrifyingly true stories from my perspective as a forensic death investigator and a sexual assault nurse examiner. Do I have some stories for you? Are you ready? I hope everyone had a very happy new year, and we are going to start a little series on men who kill their wives. And I know we talked a lot previously about domestic violence and how prevalent it is everywhere, but there are a lot of statistics on women who die at the hands of a spouse or a lover. And I know in my experience at the medical examiner's office here locally, we do have a lot of murder suicides or a lot of men who kill their wives or kill their girlfriends. Some of it, I mean, it's for different reasons, not justified, of course, but everyone has their own reason for doing it. And most people actually try to convince everyone that they didn't. Sometimes these murders are, well, they're never the smartest. They do things that make it obvious that they're guilty, like taking out life insurance policies and having affairs and changing their looks after an event. To me, you know, dumb criminals are easy to catch. And so those always interest me because it's hard for me to believe that people don't think that they're going to be a suspect when they do all the things suspicious that make the arrows point exactly to them. 40% of female murder victims actually die at the hands of a spouse or lover. And of course, there's a large amount of those who are killed by strangers, but 40% actually die at the hands of a spouse or a lover. And these are murder victims, mostly after the female ended the relationship or expressed intentions on ending a relationship, filed for divorce, had a discussion with them, maybe that they wanted to end the marriage. Females, though, murdering their spouses only account for about 6% of the male homicides. And a big portion of those, normally it's due to domestic violence. Normally, there's been a history of domestic violence, and the female finally has had enough and is going to defend themselves in any way they can. They end up murdering the spouse for that reason. A lot of times, these men kill their wives out of the heat of passion, and many times there is drugs and alcohol involved. Many times, maybe they get drunk, leave the house after a fight, and come back under the influence of some sort of drugs or alcohol. Most of the time, these murders are driven by jealousy, rage, and possessiveness. They don't want her to leave. They don't want her to have freedoms and kind of, if I can't have you, no one can type attitude. And we hear of that a lot. And a lot of these men had childhoods that were troublesome, adulthoods that were troublesome, alcohol problems, unemployment, financial issues, trouble with the IRS, trouble at work if they are still employed. So a lot of them are not functional, normal people with just your average everyday issues. A lot of them truly have a lot of underlying issues and problems, you know, when they were growing up. The common thing that we find is that many times the man feels like the woman is his world and comes to the realization when she says she wants to leave that her leaving will cause him to lose his own identity. A lot of times the men, they don't have any friends. They might not have anybody to talk to. They don't have anywhere to go. She's basically the center of his world. And without her, he cannot imagine living at all and has no other reason for living. Also, you can imagine, you know, if a woman leaves a man, it may make him feel weak and like he can't keep her, and also humiliated because it would be embarrassing to him for everyone to know that she left. Many times the behavior of these men is not compromising at all. It's his way or the highway. He also may believe that love justifies sacrificing his wife or his girlfriend. The only way that he can ensure obedience and express authority and power is to kill her. And so that's why this happens a lot. It reminds me of the Scott Peterson case back from 2002. And of course, it's a little bit different because Lacey, his wife, was not having an affair, although she was pregnant and it was his child. Lacey and Scott dated for 2 years and then eventually moved in together. And in November of 2002, Lacey was 7 months pregnant, and Peterson met a massage therapist named Amber Fry. He told Amber that he was single, so she had no knowledge that he was married. And so she began to date him, not knowing that he had a wife, especially not knowing that he had a child on the way. But in December of 23, now keep in mind, he started dating Amber in November, but December 23rd, the story went that at around 5:45, Lacey went for a haircut and spoke with her mom on the phone at about 8:30 p.m. Now, Peterson said he last saw her at 9:30 the next morning, so that would have been Christmas Eve of 2002, and she was planning to walk the dog and make cookies and had been cleaning house. Peterson was supposedly going on a fishing trip, although his story changed a couple of times. I believe he said at one point he had gone golfing, and then he changed that and said he had been fishing. The neighbor, or one of the neighbors, actually found their dog and returned it to their backyard. Of course, Lacey's car was still in the driveway. Scott gets home and he says, "I'm going to wash my clothes because I got wet on this fishing trip." So he showered and washed his clothes, which again, you know, made him look extremely guilty. Her car was there. She was missing. And he decides to order pizza and washes his clothes and takes a shower. She was reported on Christmas Eve as a missing person. And Scott actually called the mother-in-law to ask if they were together. Now, you would think that this sounded like a concerned husband, but 9 times out of 10, if someone's guilty, they're going to make phone calls so that those would be traceable and everyone would think they were concerned and look at them like, oh, he's trying to find her. He is worried. But it's not believed really that that was the case here. And police actually found her keys and her purse and sunglasses in a closet. So, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I don't think most women throw their keys and stuff in a closet. Although obviously her car was there, so her keys would have been there. Now, when the police interviewed him, they said he was a combination of arrogant and polite. And in the beginning, Lacey's parents, his in-laws, actually defended him. So they felt like that he was not to blame, and they supported him wholeheartedly. Now, in January of 2003, that's when everyone found out that prior to his affair with Amber Fry, he had actually had 2 previous affairs. 2 weeks, now this is really suspicious, 2 weeks before her disappearance, he told Amber Fry that he was a widower, which makes it look like he's planning this, right? So he's already telling her, not only is he single, but he's a widower. So in April of 2003, and this is 4 months after the murder, a couple actually found the decomposing body of a baby in a marshy area near where Lacey had been walking, supposedly with the dog. Although the autopsy results, they were sealed by the judge, an anonymous press release reported that there was nylon tape around the baby's neck and a cut on the baby's body. One day later, Lacey's torso was found, and it was about a mile away from where the baby had been located. Now, she was severely decomposed. They said to the point that it was even hard to tell by looking at her that it was a human body. So you can only imagine. I mean, we talked about decomposition before. There's a foul odor, there's maceration. Sometimes it's very difficult to tell that it's even a body. In a lot of cases, we would have insect activity and animal activity that would desecrate that body even more and make someone really hard to be identified. Of course, in these cases, they did DNA to identify Lacey and the baby, which they had agreed they were going to name him Connor. But Lacey's head, arms, legs, and internal organs were missing. Like I said, she was severely decomposed, although her cervix was intact. In April of 2003, Peterson was arrested. Okay, and this is what's weird. Like, do people not think that it's going to really make you look suspicious if you do something to change your looks? Like, it's obvious that someone is trying to cover something up if they completely change the way they look. And they may say that they were trying not to draw attention to themselves or trying to hide from the media. But you have to know deep down in the back of your mind that it really looks suspicious if you dye your hair. So his hair was dyed blonde. So it's normally like a dark brown color. And he had dyed it blonde in April when he was arrested near this golf course. And ironically, his Mercedes was packed. He claimed to be living out of it because of the media, but I believe that the prosecution thought that he planned to flee to Mexico. I mean, obviously trying to change his looks. He bought a Mercedes in his mom's name, and he had four cell phones in the car, along with Viagra. Like, why would you make a point to pack Viagra if your wife was just murdered? He had $15,000 worth of cash. He had clothing, and then he also had survival gear. So this looks very suspicious. Now, a juror was removed during the trial because she tried to conduct an independent research online. So most likely went home at night, tried to look something up about it that could have skewed her opinion on whether or not he did it. And so she was removed because of that, because that's not allowed. And also, the foreman requested removal of himself, mainly they believe because the other people on the jury didn't want him to be the foreman. But so it's just really weird that he purchased this Mercedes in his mom's name. Okay, and now this is even more weird. How many men are going to purchase porn channels on their cable service, which is traceable? I mean, we all know that's traceable. Added them like right after her death, literally days after her death. Oh, you know what? My wife just got murdered, but I'm going to watch porn. I mean, how really? He did trade in her car for a Dodge truck. So most people tend to hang on to their loved ones' belongings after they pass away, much less after they're murdered. A sudden traumatic murder like that is really going to make you sit back and want to hang on to stuff if you truly care. The prosecution believed that the affair with Amber Fry and the two other women, along with financial problems and also being a dad soon, were motives, especially if there were financial issues that he felt like would keep him from being able to support a new baby. Strangely enough, he had a $250,000 life insurance policy on Lacey, which the judge decided to give to the mother. And rightly so, that looks very super suspicious too. So he went to San Quentin after he was convicted of first-degree murder of Lacey, and then second-degree murder of Connor, the unborn child. And this all happened in Modesto, California. And then in 05, he was sentenced to death by lethal injection. Now, what I found interesting is, and I didn't even know until I started doing research, that there's some pretty recent activity on the case. He was sentenced to death by lethal injection in 05. And then in August of 2020, so that wasn't that long ago, because this happened back in 02, they overturned his death penalty and then re-sentenced him to life in prison without parole. And this was December 8th of 21. And then he was moved from San Quentin to Mule Creek State Prison in California in October of 2022. These are all fairly new things that have come up on the case. So October of 2022, when he was moved, and then just there in 21, re-sentenced to life in prison. So there's no possibility of parole for him. I can remember watching details on this case on Nancy Grace as it was going down. I think if I remember correctly, I actually watched the trial on Court TV. And it was always so interesting to me. This case really interested me. This was right before I got involved as a death investigator. So maybe even one of the reasons I decided to go into it, because I was appalled at that time that a husband would kill his wife. But then now that I'm in the business, I see how often it does happen. It's rather scary. And we see it all the time in this line of work. Not all the cases are high profile and not all of them end up on the news. But I can promise you that in your area, even if you live in a small town, it happens often and you may not hear about it. Men killing not only their wives, but also their families. The Chris Watts case is another that really, really interested me. And it was a little more recent than the Lacey Peterson case. But nonetheless, it happens a lot more than you realize. I worked cases in Harris County, Dallas County, and Denton County that all involve spouses who killed their significant other and maybe even their entire families. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about during the month of January. We are going to have some new details on some cases and some new contests on our Facebook page. Be sure and like our Facebook page and our Instagram. Check us out on the website, www.pushinguplilies.com. We will soon have some new merchandise there available for purchase as well. We're going to have some t-shirts and some more exciting contests and prizes. Again, I hope everyone had a great new year and stay super safe. We will look forward to giving you some new stories next week. Thank you so much for joining me today on Pushing Up Lilies. If you like this podcast and would like to share with others, please do me a quick favor and leave a review on Apple Podcast. This helps to make the podcast more visible to the public. Thanks again for spending your time with me, and be sure to visit me at pushinguplilies.com for merchandise and past episodes.